Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promoting for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome back to the French Rugby Podcast with me, Tim Groves, and ex-Scotland international and adopted Frenchman, Johnny Beattie. We're going to be joined by All Black international and now Stade Français scrum half, Brad Weber, in a little while to chat about life in Paris, as well as reflect on the Six Nations and where the sport is in both the Northern and Southern Hemispheres. First though, Johnny, it was an epic final weekend to the Six Nations, so let's chat about that. I was going to ask you how your weekend was, but I saw a lot more of you than I did my own family. So tell the listeners how it was.
What, you and me together? That was the best bit.
It was nice.
It was great. It was, I can't remember the last time we actually got to do a game together or be at the same stadium or in the same city together. So it was really cool. That was the best bit, was getting to have 5 or 6 pints of Guinness after the game together.
5 or 6, yeah? No more.
There was maybe one gin and tonic thrown on the end. But if we're honest, we were in bed by what, 12:30?
Yeah, I felt like a couple of old men, really. There was the chance to go out. It may or may not have been where the Scotland players, they may have been in bed as well, but we chose not to.
What's more embarrassing is that we're still absolutely wrecked the next day after getting to bed and still tired now. It's 3 days later. But yeah, mate, it was awesome. It was an amazing weekend of rugby, wasn't it? Great results, good rugby, good fun. We were both together with the ITV team. And yeah, nothing good after midnight happens anyway. So 12:30 isn't too bad. But mate, it was just cool. It was great to be pitch side, to be involved, to watch it up close. And yeah, it's probably my favorite weekend. The last two rounds were my two favorite rounds of the competition. And it was good stuff. It was great to be there.
Even though Scotland lost them both. We're not here to talk about Scotland or the winners of the tournament, Ireland, really. But they impressed, albeit in a limited fashion. Everyone struggles against Ireland anyway. They were too knackered, arguably, to do much in attack because they defended so much. But Scotland put in a good showing and made Ireland work hard for it.
I mean, were Ireland ever really in danger?
No.
No. So, I mean, they defended bravely. They dug out. They probably stopped 3 or 4 tries. They held up and turned over on their try line. So it was heroic. But did they really show anything that made us think they could beat them? And yeah, for Scotland, a disappointing competition for Scotland, isn't it? I know it's a French rugby podcast, but still the best group players we've had, but everyone else is just better, sadly, technically, strength, physically. They're a little bit further ahead. We've lost 3 games by what? Almost the flip of France. Scotland lost 3 games by a score. France won those 3 tight games by a score.
That's the difference in top level sport though, isn't it?
But it's cruel, isn't it? Mm. And then the sort of narrative afterwards, France would be quite happy. Didn't play that well for the first few games, but they come away finishing second. Scotland, absolute firing, and then threw it away, finished 4th. And the margins are absolutely tiny, but ultimately Scotland weren't good enough to kill off an Italian side that were phenomenal last week and an Irish side that were just too strong. Although Scotland didn't seem broken, they just got overrun, didn't they? All the territory, all the possession, and it was one-way traffic.
The debrief on Scotland's Six Nations is for another time and probably another podcast, but we talked France. You mentioned our Saturday. We did have 5, let's call it 10, 15, and a gin and tonic, Guinness, and enough pizza, by the way, to feed at least 1 or 2 rugby teams. There was so much there whilst watching France against England. Yep. You may have watched some bits back. You may have watched the whole game back, but what did you make of it?
The most important bit was we managed to get some pizza off Flats. Dave Flatman, who loves his pizza. There's some good videos of him eating pizza.
If you did a pie chart of the amount of pizza that Flats and I ate compared to everyone else, it was probably quite a lot. A decent share we had.
Mate, you put away your body weight. Disgusting. What did I make of the game? I loved the game in that it was close, in that it went down to the last second, in that there was jeopardy. You didn't know what was going to happen. And France has sort of found themselves again, hadn't they? In that they brought back their physicality, new different players that had come in and made a real difference. I think there's an understanding, you get the backdrop is that everyone over here was very harsh and very worried, right? But understanding that there's probably been a Six Nations of transition, they've still finished second, they've had some new players come in, eject energy, Le Garec's been outstanding, Barry, Miafu, Deporter, but that game still, as fun as it was to watch, there were still some big defensive error. You think of Biai Barry flying in off his wing, probably giving away two tries single-handedly, but you got to love some of the tries they created. The pace, the power, the ability to create from turnover, from line-out, from phase play, raw power. We saw these things coming back into the game that were really exciting. And actually, I quite appreciated some of the way England attacked. The line breaks they created, taking the ball late to the line, late delayed passes against the blitz defense and finding holes, challenging Deporter and guys that weren't used to it. So, mate, it was back and forth. I really enjoyed it. And I think that's going to salvage the campaign for France in that they finished on a real high. French rugby public are proud of their side around media. Everyone seems to be quite happy and more understanding than they were two, 3 weekends ago. And like I said right at the start, three very close games. You think of that Scotland away, Italy in Lille, and again beaten by England by a couple of points. It's been tight, but they've come away with big wins and they finished second. So everyone's a bit more settled.
The fact that the title was sewn up by Ireland in the game before that one obviously did mean that it was always likely to be a bit more of a free-flowing, entertaining encounter than one that was nervy because both sides could technically win the title. You mentioned the defence, though. A lot of that is because new players have come in and they're probably not quite up to speed with the system yet. From a Sean Edwards perspective, do you think he's happy both with where France are at, but also his own situation, because there have been rumblings in the media?
You won't be happy with some of the naivety. Again, you think back to England's tries, you think of Ollie Lawrence going through number one as off the back of them all. You number up, you take man on man D. There's no way that he should be getting through Gil Fiku there. So they've numbered up wrong. You think of Ollie Lawrence's second try, Damian Penno's tackled with his hands. Ollie Lawrence has crawled through and scored. He's not going to be happy. And these things are, for defense is easier to coach. It's much more simple. Attack is a much more difficult thing to coach into your players. Defense is an attitude, a mindset, communication, and then going for it. And so there's just lots of little bits. What was it, four tries in the end that they scored?
Yeah.
England? And the two last were created by Biai Barry, just overly enthusiastic. Again, that's the sort of maybe the youthful nature of where he is in his rugby career coming through, overreading, flying in, blitzing onto nobody and creating overlaps for England on the flank. So yeah, I think Sean will be disappointed with the manner of those tries and they weren't hard. They weren't difficult to break down. That's what you want to be. You want to be robust, but they were cracked really easily. So it's weird. For the most part during the game, they defended well. They competed really well on the ground. And then there was sort of four occasions where they fell apart for whatever another reason. So yeah, I think Sean will be disappointed, but he's a proud bloke. He'll stick to his task. He knows that he's got a lot out of this group previously and he'll want to get them back to where they have been because defensively, they've been exceptional. And I think that was a real off game for them at the weekend. Even though they won the game, he'll be livid with conceding four tries.
They won, but England didn't lose. They just ran out of time.
That's what Steve Borthwick said. That's what somebody who just lost would say. We ain't playing next try as the winner, Steve. And I get it was a back and forth game. It was exciting and it's really encouraging for England as well, right? Because from where they were in the opening two rounds to where they are now, shackles off a little bit and putting some pace and injecting something onto the ball. So that was cool. But yeah, his comments at the end of the game
were interesting,
let's just say. There's 80 minutes for everyone. Most people have got that concept. So it was a funny one for him to chuck out at the end of the game. But yeah, great to see them back.
I've heard of spin, but yeah, that's a new level. We just ran out of time. We didn't lose. You must have used that one. Sorry, Johnny, I'm not going to go there. You chatted about the improvement in England. Similarly for France, in a different way, probably. And obviously they were starting from a different point. But we were chatting about all the doom and gloom, not just in the French media that you mentioned, but in the more widespread media, even over here, people who possibly didn't know anything about inside the camp. We're talking about Fabien Galthié being under pressure. You were saying, just give him time, let the new coaches have time to bed in. But there was doom and gloom. And at the end, as you say, a top two finish for the fifth straight year. So not too bad. Is the feeling in the French media and among the public now a lot better? Has it shifted?
It shifted, but they also got a lot of their players back, didn't they? Like you think, Like Thibaut Flamand, Manny Miafu, the difference they made coming back into the side. The line-out ran smooth, the punch they get in and around the field, the dominance in carries, the lift that gives the other players. There's all these sorts of things. And we can't forget, mate, like we talked about the financial bits last week as well. That kick at the end for Tomás Ramos, who I think has been exceptional during this competition. It was worth €1 million to the FFR. So there's all sorts of little bits and motivation, and but they've just been missing some players. They've started again with some new coaches. It hasn't been easy, and they just need a little bit of time. You think as well, you've got Romain Ntamack and Antoine Dupont came back. They trained together for the first time at Toulouse. Like, these boys are going to be coming back. I thought Francois Cross was probably the best player on the field.
Surprised he wasn't in the running for player of the tournament, given some of the names that were in there, maybe just on the outside of that.
But I think he'd have been the only French player that consistently has been excellent. He's been constant physical. He's carried, he's stolen lineout ball, he's jackaled, he's just had a massive work rate, and he's just got France on the front foot and generated things for them that nobody else really has. So he'd have been the only one that would have been up there. But yeah, I don't even, who are the other nominations?
You got Bundiaki, Tommaso Menoncello, Duane van der Merwe, and the eventual winner, Ossian Benel.
Hey, I'd give it to Brex. Like, the way Brex has acted as a pivot to this new Italian platform and brought those players around him into the game and just made them constant. Like, we saw down in Cardiff, we saw against Scotland, and he weighs in defensively as well. He might not be the most physical bloke going forward, but I just think as a pivot, and he just makes that team tick and allows Garbisi to have a second set of eyes. Men and check, like, the way he brings those boys in at pace around him, I think he's been phenomenal.
So out of those four, do you give it to, most people are saying they would give it to Benel, but maybe that's me just reading the media over here. You give it to Bundiaki because he's part of the winning team, or do you give it to Menoncello for the Italy factor?
No, it was definitely not Duhan van der Murray. He was good for two games and running in interception tries and running in space. It has to be either Irish or English, I would say. Well, it doesn't have to be English, but Ben Earl has been exceptional in a side that struggled in the opening couple of games as well. Bundiaki, probably for the fact that they've won it. If it was just me nominating independently, I'd have Brex. That's my choice. But it's going to go to either Aki or Earl. Earl, it has to be said, has been wonderful to watch. Again, total appreciation. He didn't used to be picked because of his defensive capabilities. But you see, I've always thought his work on the deck, the amount of ball he turns over, crucial timings, the way he chooses his rucks, he's phenomenal. But it's his work in attack that is, I mean, he runs like one of the best centres in the game, and he's dynamic, and he can bump, and he can step, and he can offload. And we saw at the weekend the ability to be that second man and take tip on ball at gain line, which is not an easy skill either, to come from far with time and space and pick a hole and choose a line. So he's a talented boy, and he's a real standout competition. So either him or Aki. Aki's just done what Aki's done for the past 5-6 years.
I have to say, Bundiaki's been brilliant, and they probably do want a spread of nationalities across those four nominations. But if I was picking an Irishman to be player of the tournament, I would be picking Dan Sheehan rather than Bundiaki, to be honest. Maybe even Joe McCarthy, although he did tail off maybe slightly and played his better games in the first half of the tournament.
Yeah, I guess that's a side of it. A good side, isn't it? Two or three boys that have picked up with big moments, but collectively as a team, they've been the best. And in general, probably the best competition we've seen, I'd say, from my time being part of it, playing in it and watching it and commentating on it. Really close games, 10 of them within the difference of 5 points. And the emergence of Italy, we just mentioned Brex, but the way they've changed the dynamic of the competition makes it, it makes it more worth looking forward to. I look forward more now to next year's competition than I've probably ever looked forward to a Six Nations comp for the competition. All six sides could all pitch up, could all beat each other, as we saw this year. And that's what made it extra interesting. So the competition has been elevated to another level.
Right. We haven't spoken yet about the end of the game. Tomás Ramos kicked the penalty, but should have been given, Johnny. The Benel, no arms tackle. And also the way that it came about, the fact that it wasn't given by the referee and the TMO intervened.
It's a big interjection. He does have his knee planted on the deck, which doesn't look great. And yes, it was a no arms tackle. I've seen them given and not million a million times, which makes it very difficult. You also had Ellis Genge that was pinged for something very similar earlier in the game against Antonio. So I'm not sure if they were hot on it or if they'd been asked to keep an eye on it at halftime amongst the referee team. But, mate, technically, it's the law. And weirdly, watching the game, I didn't pick that up at all from the sidelines. So the fact that it's been picked up is very magnified, let's just say, by the TMO team, but they've given it and it's within the rules of the realms of law. So you can't disagree, but England will feel pretty aggrieved to have lost the game in that manner.
You're absolutely right. That's rugby, isn't it? I mean, Wayne Barnes has said it. I think Nigel Owens has probably said it recently as well. Sure, French referees have said the same. Rugby, whether we like it or not now, is a bit of a subjective sport. And the laws state, as you rightly put, that can be given as a penalty. We know it wouldn't in lots of other circumstances. Maybe referees would miss it, but it is right. The decision's right. It's just the fact that we'd rather the referee had made it, right? Rather than the TMA.
Can I throw it back to you though? Because if you compare to NFL, right, where you have multiple referees all looking out for things and there's flags thrown.
And also in the NFL, Johnny, the final 2 minutes of a game, everything is decided by TV. Like, they come in for everything.
So that's where they are, but they are reinforcing the law. And it's still contentious, right? Because every time you watch any game, fans still are going back and forth about, but would you not say you'd rather see the laws enforced? And if a TMO sees something that's missed, he comes in, or would you rather the TMO interjects as little as possible? I'm asking you this as an Englishman that's just lost in Lyon, and I know what your answer is going to be.
I would like consistency. That's my answer as an Englishman and as someone working in rugby. I think it's fine. If that decision is made every time, isn't it? By a TMO coming in because they've seen it, coming in quite quickly, we should say as well. It wasn't like there was a lengthy delay or anything like that. If that happens in all games, then I think people would completely understand that, because as you say, it's probably the right call.
But it doesn't. And that's why you're aggrieved.
I personally am not aggrieved, but Steve Borden probably is, yeah.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Right, we'll get our guest on in just a minute. But first, we should find out what your meter moment of the week is, Johnny.
It's Italy, mate.
Of course it is.
I mean, I think they're my new favourite team. Backing up their win in Rome by smashing Wales in Wales. I mean, that's epic. It really is. And they've now got a side with a big, angry defence, organised, lively attack. They've got X-Factor, Pannicello, Pani, Brex, Garbisi. They're fun to watch. You have to say they're fun to watch. And they've added so much jeopardy to the competition, which makes it better and each and every year more exciting going forward. And you think of, we've spoken before about the under-20s, the depth they've got coming through. I just want to see more of them. I want to see consistency through autumn, and I want to see them pitch up Six Nations next year and go for it. And I'm delighted for Gonzalo Quesada. So, Italy, mate. Easy.
And a French connection, a French coach that's made all the difference. That was Johnny's meter moment of the week. And meter is the world's number one wireless meat thermometer, recently making over 20 million cooks better with their game-changing app and completely wireless Bluetooth meat probe. You can use it on a barbecue, in the oven, or in a pan, and you can get your hands on one at Meter.com. Plus, you can get 10% off any full-price item. All you have to do is enter the code FrenchPod10 at checkout. That's FrenchPod10, and you get 10% off any full-price item at Meter.com. Let's get our guest on now then, and we can have a chat with an All Black who's just settling into life in Paris. Dad Francais scrum half, Brad Webber, joins us. How you doing?
Good, thanks, Lids. Cheers for finally getting me on. I know it's been a little bit of a journey to get here, but good to be here.
Not sure whose fault that is. It's probably ours.
We'll say
it's good to have you, mate. It's definitely ours, mate.
I'm happy to take a little bit of that on the chin as well.
So, mate, 5 months in, you settled, you're enjoying it. How are you finding Paris?
Yeah, I'd like to think I am settled now. Starting to understand how Parisians work and how sort of life goes. I think the first month I was here, I struggled a little bit just with particularly the language barrier still is a little bit tough, but like I'm learning as much as I can and trying to practice as much as possible. But I guess Paris is one of those cities where you could actually get away with speaking English. So like I've been trying to practice my French when I go into cafes and restaurants, but most people speak straight back to me in English. So it's not good for the practice, but I appreciate the help that the Parisians are giving me so far. So yeah, it's been good. I'm here by myself at the moment. My partner's still in New Zealand. So I'm trying to get set up until she gets here, and then I can sort of show her the ropes a bit, I think.
Off the field is one thing, but you played for Hawke's Bay and reached the NPC final. So you arrived a little bit after the start of the season. Well, not a little bit, actually. It was sort of late October. So Stade Francais had, two pre-seasons by that point? A smart move to arrive after those.
Yeah, exactly. I think I'm about 14 months straight of rugby, so no need for a pre-season with me. And talking to the lads, I think the pre-season that they've had this past year was one of the toughest ones I've had, so I was pretty happy to miss that, but obviously I've got one to look forward to soon. So it'll be interesting to see what a Stade Francais pre-season is like compared to a Super Rugby one.
We've just been talking Six Nations. You're only recently in the country. You've got a few teammates that have been involved with the French side. So have you watched the competition? What did you make of it? And what did you make of the youngsters that were playing for Stade Francais?
Yeah, to be honest, I haven't watched a lot of Six Nations in the past, if I'm honest. They're often at niggly times for Kiwis. So unless you're sort of watching replays, you don't really watch a lot. But I certainly have watched a little bit this time. Obviously watched the last couple of French games with Leo making his debut. He's a great kid that I've really enjoyed getting to know in my short time here, and was pretty stoked for him to see him get his debut. And geez, he was real hot on the weekend, wasn't he? We've seen him do some pretty crazy stuff individually here with us at Stade Francais. So it was cool to see him sort of open up and get a bit of space. And you know, he's got some speed and he can pull off some pretty freaky stuff with his chip kicks and stuff like that. He obviously didn't get a lot of opportunities for that, but opportunities elsewhere, and he took them. And that's all you can ask of a young fellow like that. And the boys have been bantering the last little bit of time about how much money the French guys make when they win Six Nations games, especially away games. And I think I figured out that I think Leo might have made more in the last 2 weeks with the French team than I would in a whole year with the All Blacks.
Really?
So I'm like, you bugger. Yeah, he's 21 years old, making more than me. Oh, well.
So he's taking you all out for dinner?
You'd hope so, yeah. I'm yet to see it yet. I think the boys are pretty keen for him to, maybe a shout a night out would be enough.
We might come on to the differences between Six Nations, Rugby Championship, Super Rugby Top 14, that kind of thing. But just on Leo, he's an enormous guy for a fullback, and he's a guy who looks like he'd suit any league in the world. He'd go well in Super Rugby.
Yeah, I was having a think about this maybe even like the first month into my stint here, is who would go good in Super Rugby. And Leo was one of the first guys I said to. I was like, it's a shame that the money's probably not really worth it to go down to and play Super Rugby, but he would thrive in an environment like that. And And really probably learn a lot too, playing at a speed like Super Rugby. Like I just imagine him at the Chiefs with Damien McKenzie and Sean Stevenson, like those guys, like he would just love it. But I must say that I think guys like him coming through and the way that Stade Français are wanting to change, I guess, the traditional way that Stade Français have played the last few years and play a bit more up-tempo and with a bit more speed, like I think he will start to relish it even more than he is now. Like he's doing so much at the pace we're playing. If we start playing a bit quicker, then I think he's going to really be one of the best players in the competition.
Joe, it's a good point that Brad makes, isn't it? The finances aren't there to do it, but Joe Marchant did it a few years ago and went over to play in New Zealand. And it is unfortunate that they aren't there because it would benefit French players.
Of course it would. And again, for Joe Marchant, that was almost at the orders of Eddie Jones. So you're talking about the financial incentive of the bonus money for France. So Joe Marchant knew if he was going to get the bonus money for England, he had to do that stint in Super to please Eddie. So he was like, right, I'm off. I'm coming back for those bonuses. And that's the thing for Leo now. Like once you've got that financial threshold that you get used to, like you don't want to go anywhere else, do you? And the French boys, like their bonuses are ridiculous. But in terms of opportunity, it would have been a dream for so many people in this year to play in the Super competition. It's not something that opens itself up to too many foreigners at all. You can see why. It's Federation controlled. They're there to develop local players and generate players for the ABs. But yeah, it would be incredible. There's a few, like you think of Freddie Michalak getting over to the Sharks back in the day and guys like that, they've had the chance. It would be really cool and it'd be great to see more coming back and forth. But yeah, just sort of financial mechanisms don't let it happen, do they? Especially when you've got Leo Barry taking your year's salary.
Exactly.
In one appearance, ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, and I mean, even talking to Joe about his stint in Super Rugby, like he loved it and he thought it was really beneficial to him and his development. He was a young guy, but saw how Kiwis play. I mean, we even had John Ryan with us at the Chiefs last year, who was just fantastic, like a great team man, but also did such a good job for us as a tight head prop. And there's definitely space for it, like you say, if clubs or international teams are smart enough that they can potentially send them away for maybe a gap year, if some teams are needing to fill a gap whilst still giving them that financial security, I think it could have a lot of benefit to players in the northern hemisphere. It'd be pretty cool to see.
But I reckon as well, weirdly, and I don't want to dig on French, but like it's definitely had a reputation in the past for being less professional, maybe a little bit less organized and a bit more chaotic. But I think one thing that could be really, yeah, you're smiling because you're in agreement. Been here 5 months, you got the memo. But it could be really cool. Like say for instance, if you had like an academy prospect and you're trying to get them Gif and you want to get them qualified, but first year out, like if they need game time, get them an ITM Cup or get them playing something or show them a different environment, show them a different part of the world. It's also great to open their eyes and just speak a different language, the same way that typically foreigners do coming the other way in France. So I'd love to see that. I wanted to ask you, like, what other guys at Stade and around the top 14 have you already come up against and you thought, geez, they'd go good back home, like Joe being one, Leo being another, but who others have you seen?
I mean, I think it would be pretty obvious if I said Sekou Makalou. He's the most unbelievable athlete I have ever seen in my life.
Pretty sure.
Just absolute freak. So I think he's probably an obvious one. Other guys in my team that I've sort of thought of, Sergo Abramishvili, the young loosehead prop. I think he's a good scrummager, but he's awesome around the field, works pretty hard. Like he's got the fitness for the speed of Super Rugby. I think he'd really enjoy it. And then some of our loose forwards at the moment are pretty good, like Machu Hirigoyen, and I think he's pretty special. Surprised he's sort of not knocking on the door with the French team. And even a guy like Romain Briart, who's probably a bit of an unsung hero, but he just does a lot of the grunty, the dirty work that certainly Kiwi teams really like. Like obviously, like guys like Brodie Retallick are probably sort of at the high end of the type of player that Kiwis like in the forwards, guys that work hard. But there's so many other good guys that I think that are similar to him that I think would really cut their teeth at Super Rugby. He's a tall, they're both tall men, so good options in the line out as well. So I don't know. It's just such a shame. Like, I'd love to see it. And even I'd just love to see, I know there's been a lot of talk about the world, like a world sort of club competition at some point, every sort of second year or something, even seeing something like that, just to see what, you know, where the Super Rugby teams would be at against the Northern Hemisphere teams. It would just be interesting seeing the different styles, like the speed and the pace of Super Rugby, but the good defences and top end set pieces of the top 14 and the Northern Hemisphere teams would be, yeah, make for great watching.
And in terms of what Johnny was laughing about, a bit tongue in cheek, the French attitude to training, more relaxed generally. Obviously, the game has moved on in France and it is more professional now. The facility is brilliant at Stade Français. Obviously, I'm sure the coaching is great as well. But just generally, give us an insight into the differences sort of behind the scenes from where you were in Super Rugby and where you are now.
Yeah. Look, I wouldn't want to say that every French player is like, they're not all lazy or like not professional or anything like that. Like, but there's certainly some guys that really, you can tell, really want to get better every day, and maybe other guys that aren't as internally motivated, they need more external, like more motivation from others. But in France, right, like there's 32, well, how many fully professional teams are there in France? There's just so many. So there's like Super Rugby, there's five in New Zealand, there's five Super Rugby teams. So if you mess up your chance at super level, then you go back on the tools, or you know, you're back to semi-professional just playing NPC. So the incentive to continue to get better when you're a Super Rugby player is just, there's just so much more on the line, I think. Whereas, you know, you can get away with a little bit more here. But what I've been really impressed with is because I'd heard about all that stuff that you guys are talking about, and certainly I'm seeing a little bit of it, but with the new coaching group here, seems to be a lot more drive to, I guess, motivate those guys that maybe aren't as internally motivated to get them to do more, to get us to be a little bit more professional around here. I'm putting my political voice.
You sure are. I can tell you want to get kicked. Because again, we nearly spoke earlier in the year, but then obviously something kicked off. Remember with the incident with Poe, which we've talked about, so we don't have to talk about it again. Earlier, we also had Karim Ghezal and Laurent Labitte. They came out and like openly criticized the players and like shat on them in the media. But they've done really well with France. Yes. And things seem to be going better with Stade Français. So like behind the scene, like not the scrap with Poe, we can leave that at the door, but like other stuff. What did you see? Like, what was it that wasn't going right? Or internally, what were they trying to change culture-wise that they've sort of given a kick up the backside and things seem to have clicked into gear for you?
That is a great question. Obviously, Karim has probably more of he's more in with the forwards. So look, I don't know exactly sort of what goes on, but
And sorry, just to sort of reiterate what you said. So you said, fuck, I'm nearly 40 something years old and I tackle better than you. Like, it came out publicly and like shat on the boys. So like that publicly, but like internally, what was happening with you guys?
Yeah, I don't know if the boys were, some of the boys were too happy with with those sorts of comments, to be fair. But look, I think ultimately I know that Karim and the coaching group, they want to change the way that Stade Français are playing. Obviously, we're doing enough to win games at the moment, and we're playing some pretty good footy. And I think we've got a real good base in terms of set piece, forwards just smashing through, kicking game. But ultimately, I think which has been the way that Stade Français have played the last sort of 3 or 4 years. And that's good enough to maybe, you know, to get you into a playoff. But is it enough to win the competition? Is it enough to win top 14? And I think the coaching group recognize that, because when the playoffs come around, the weather's good around here, you're going to need to be able to play with a bit more speed and a bit more expensive. So to get us there, I think it's going to ruffle a few feathers and to try and change habits around here. And I think at times maybe the Karim might be roughing a few guys up the wrong way, but I think he realizes that he's not going to please everybody by doing that. And in the long run, is it going to be beneficial to giving us the best chance to win top 14? Because ultimately that's what we're here to do. the coaching group had been brought in for us to go from playoff contenders to winning the whole thing. So I'm on board with and I think most of the boys are now on board with that. It's just going to take a little bit of time, maybe a little bit of growing pains to get us to that point.
I suppose it goes along with what you were saying about the financial difference between Super Rugby and the top 14. Also, what were you talking about, the cultural differences, the training, all of that stuff. But didn't you say that, essentially, I'm paraphrasing a little bit, some of these guys don't know they were born because they get the kit washed for them, they have breakfast, they have lunch at the training. Do you not get that in New Zealand?
No, absolutely not. When I saw that, yeah, we get breakfast and lunch and someone washes every single bit of training kit, I'm like, are you, have I woken up in bloody heaven? I'm doing a load of washing every day back in New Zealand, washing all my own kit, sorting my own breakfast and my own lunch out every single day. Life's pretty good over here, man. I don't know if these guys realize how good they've got it. They would realize if they went and played Super Rugby. I mean, Super Rugby teams, they basically need New Zealand Super Rugby teams need a home quarter final to make money for a year, for a season. So it's, you know, the money's not there to provide all that sort of stuff. But yeah, I didn't know any different. So like I was still pretty great. I was stoked with how Chiefs ran things. I thought we ran things really good. It wasn't until I got over here that I'm like, wow, okay, this is what it's like.
This is even more ammunition for our argument that French players should go over to New Zealand, Johnny. Then they'll really know that they're born.
It's weird though, eh? Like it was the same I was Montpellier, Cast and Bayonne. And every club you had the same thing. You had somebody that was either a volunteer, was there looking after the lavery. And every day there'd be a little box handed to you with your kit. And at the end of the day, you hand your box back and you just leave. Like, whereas I was the same when I was in Scotland previously, all my stuff that was size 2XL, I was washing it. It was a medium by the end of the year. Like it was absolutely terrible. So yeah, like it's just a certain level of comfort. That's almost, I think rugby players associate that almost with like football clubs. Like you might think like football players might get that level of care. Whereas the rugby boys here in France, they get it. And it is a level of comfort that we don't get elsewhere. Mate, it is weird. It is what it is. Anyway, back to rugby. You coming over, there's a big emphasis in France on the role of scrum halves and how integral they are. They're a menace, but they've always been pivotal in France. They've always been pivotal in every other position, but there seems to be more of an accent on Nine's role and how important he is to a team in the top 14. Have you noticed the difference in the way you're treated and the way people look to you for direction over here versus back home?
Definitely. I guess I'm still having a little bit of growing pains around getting used to that. I'm so used to just listening to my 10 and just biffing everything from the ruck, just playing at speed, trying to beat teams with speed. Whereas here there's so much more emphasis on kicking a lot. I think I've box kicked more in the 5 months I've been here than probably my whole tenure at the Chiefs. So that's been taking a bit of getting used to. But I'm enjoying the challenge of it, of trying to adjust my game and trying to play a different style. And there's, I've been real impressed with not just, like, just Nines in general in France. Like a lot of their vision around attacking kicks in the 22, I just don't see that in Super Rugby really ever. I don't even know how they see it some of the times, and sometimes I'm like, what, why would you do that right then? It shouldn't come off, but then it worked. So I'm like, what do I know, right? So because I think if you watch a lot of my rugby, you know, I'm a good kicker, but I wouldn't say I'm a world-class kicker. So I don't think Stade Francais got me over here to box kick all the time or to be this world-class box kicker. They got me over here to play with speed and to, you know, give us a bit more tempo. I've obviously had to bring my game down to suit our game at the moment, and then hopefully we try and bring that speed in to get it there eventually. I would say the first sort of half of my time here, I was probably struggling a little bit with getting used to how much emphasis is put on the nine as a more of a game manager compared to the 10. But I think certainly I talk a lot with Zach Henry, and we're keen to sort of get it to that point. So hopefully you'll see that eventually. But yeah, man, it's definitely been a little bit of an adjustment period, and struggled for I'd say maybe not struggled. I'd probably say I feel like I've been pretty inconsistent since I've been over here, just getting used to how it's all working. But, you know, I'm working hard every day, so hopefully I'll get there.
I was going to say just that. I mean, it must be a bit of both, because clearly, as you say, you've got to adjust, acclimatize to what is expected in the top 14, but also they don't sign you knowing you as a player if they don't want a bit of what you do back. So it's got to be a bit of both. And then when you throw into the mix, I was going to ask, a man Johnny knows very well, Rory Cocker, about 50 years old, turns up and is competing with you for the scrum half journey. So how have you found working with him?
That's been good. I mean, Rory's unique, shall we say. I think you probably agree with me there, Johnny. He's a unique man, but he's been good for me, like just in terms of trying to show me how things work in top 14. Because there was a couple of times even at training, like Kareem had to like almost stop training and be like, Brad, you're not in New Zealand anymore. Like it's, you know, you need to pull the handbrake up a little bit. And Rory's been good in terms of talking me through how things work as nines. I know he gets on the wrong side of the referee pretty much every game. So
no,
I'm trying not to learn too much off him in regards to that. Try to leave them alone, but no, he's been good. And like, certainly I didn't want to, I've played 80 minutes a couple of times since I've been over here as well, which has been fine, to be honest, but I don't know if it's sustainable for a whole season. So it's nice, I guess, having someone like Rory there, that while the other two boys are sort of cutting their teeth at this level and bringing them in slowly, Rory's a good backup for me to take a bit of that load off at times. But he's unique, man.
Mate, he is unique. I was going to say, getting the inner workings of the top 14 and how to play nine, and getting past the inner workings of Rory's head and how that works is a challenge in itself. He's some boy, but then also he's still trucking on. Like, he's still churning out performances for you boys, and his level's still good. He's 105 years old. So like, has he inspired you to chug on for another 5-10 years? Because he's still in great nick.
I wouldn't say he's inspiring me to carry on post put it that way, but he is inspiring just in general to be able to do what he's doing at his age. And you're right, he's playing some great code. I mean, he still has those random things where you're kind of like what are you thinking? But so much, he's such a competitor. Like, I've played with a few real competitive guys in my time, and he's right up there. He's such a pest. Like, he gives nines. He's the guy that gives nines a bad name because of how much of a pest he is to everybody else. But it works. Like, he's so good at it. He gets away with a lot, and like he knows what it takes at top 14 level. So he's been a really good bit of experience for our side, and he's been good to watch. But look, to answer your question, I don't plan on playing top 14. When I'm 38 or 39.
Your mind might be changed. You get your kit washed for you, you get a free lunch, money's good. Hey, we'll speak to you in 5 years' time.
Once you get on Leo Barry's salary, there'll be no getting rid of you. Absolutely kidding. And mate, generally, like, you lost to La Rochelle about a week ago, but before then you'd won 5 on the bounce. So I'm assuming, like, you boys are flying. Confidence must be pretty high.
Definitely, yeah. You'd hope it was after having that many wins on the bounce. And you know, like, I heard a lot of stuff about French teams playing away and how the mentality's a bit different, but been impressed with the boys this season. And we've had big away wins in Bordeaux, Racing, Oyonnax, places like this. So Lyon as well. And some guys who have been here sort of 7 or 8 years, I know Paul Aloa-Mille said that was the first time he'd ever won in Lyon, maybe the first time he'd won in Bordeaux. So like, it's pretty good.
Yeah, 5 on the spin probably doesn't sound that much to you coming from New Zealand, Brad, but in the top 14, it doesn't happen.
No, I was like with the Chiefs last year, I think other than the final, we only lost one game the whole year. So it's like, yeah, it takes a bit of getting used to. But like, I'd obviously heard everything about, and even just watching the results, like teams at the bottom of the table were beating teams at the top when they play at home. And seeing some of the atmospheres that are at those teams, it's like you can kind of understand why. Like, there's not as much, like, there is home field advantage in Super Rugby, but it's not as an advantage as it is here with just the support and the way the crowds are. You just don't get that in New Zealand. So I understand it now, but five in a row, I even heard like Sudfrance hadn't won five games in a row in like however many years. So I'm like,
that's not to be sniffed at. The only thing that's changed is you, mate. So it must be you that's changed everything in the place.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, they better sign me on for another 5 years.
Exactly. Off you move, Cockett. I want to ask you about the coaching staff as well, because you mentioned Kareem, you mentioned Laurent, but Paul Gustard, Guzzy's also there. And I wanted to ask you about the importance he has in your defensive structures, the way you're set up to defend, because you seem fairly robust as well. Through those five games, you defended fairly well. So what's Guzzy like to work with as a coach and as a bloke?
Guzzy's been unreal for me personally. Obviously English speaking, but he was awesome in like during the recruitment that Stade Français had with me, and just a really good man. Like I get along really well with him, but as a coach, mate, he's brilliant. Like really knows what he wants out of his defense, which is obviously pretty crucial for a defense coach. But like I've been coached by defensive coaches that, you know, are as sure as what he wants, and very demanding, knows exactly. So his messaging is very clear, and the boys have really responded well. Like this has probably been one of the best defensive teams I've been a part of, to be honest. It's really, really good. And it's one thing about the top 14 that I've probably been most impressed with is the defenses overall. They're pretty hard to break down, but our one in particular, boys are really confident, causing turnovers, and that's a lot of it's down to Gussie. He's not only is he a good coach, but like he's really good around the group. A lot of our team meetings have a bit of humor that he brings in. Can't really, like, if any normal sort of person come in and like watch some of our presentations that he does, like yeah, there'd be some pretty bad headlines, probably. But it's good for the lads, like gets the boys up. So
he famously took a wolf into training, Wolfpack Saracens, that kind of thing. Has he done anything well with Stade Français?
Well, funny that we're actually playing Lyon this week with the Wolves, right? So there might have been something similar. Like, I'll let your minds do their own imagination, but. Yeah, he's pretty creative as well. So
are there any team examples? I'm worried now with what you have been shown. Are there any team examples that could give us a flavor of what you could let people into?
This is related, but are you guys planning on trying to get Joe Marchant on?
Why not?
We'll get everyone eventually.
You should ask him that question, because there's been
So what happened to Joe with Guzzy?
Joe with Quinns, obviously. Guzzy coached Quinns, but also coached a lot against Quinns, and Sarri's Quinns, big rivalry there. So I'm putting two and two together here. We'll get Joe on. We'll ask him.
They have a bit of banter, but it's I would say like no one's safe, including your family, your girlfriends, everything with Guzzy. So
awesome.
Yeah. Watch what you put on social media. Just be smart. Don't be don't be silly, because it can come back to bite you.
We'll leave that to everyone's imaginations until we get Joe on, and then we'll clear all this up.
I'm excited to hear his answer.
We mentioned that you arrived a little bit late. You were playing the NPC final. We've got to mention the World Cup as well. You obviously trained with the All Blacks before the World Cup. You'd had a long career with the All Blacks. And then obviously to not be selected. You've moved on now, but I presume that was a tough period.
Yeah, it's still eats away at me a little bit, to be honest. Mostly because, look, I thought my Super Rugby season last year was probably the best one that I've had personally. Like, I probably didn't have as many highlight plays that I'd had in the past with big breakaways and stuff like that. But in terms of an overall game, like consistency with everything, and obviously leading our team to, you know, I hate even thinking about the Super Rugby final, but it felt like we were the best team all year. And like, I thought I'd earned the right to be back in the All Blacks. And I think the biggest thing for me too was my last year with the All Blacks, my last full year, 2021, I think it was, it started some really big tests. I started against South Africa, started against Australia, and played really well and some good wins in those games. So I guess I'd finally felt like I belonged at international level. Like I finally, like, because the first sort of I guess maybe 10 tests that I had. Most of them were off the bench for Nagi. You know, obviously played a part, but you kind of want to prove to yourself that you belong at international level. And it's not until you start big tests against big nations that, and you perform in those ones, and when you're kind of confirmed, like, yeah, okay, I'm made for international rugby. And so I was really confident in my game, and especially if anything was to happen to Aaron, that I was real confident that if it was a World Cup final against South Africa, that I'd be happy as to jump in as a starter and perform. So, like, I guess, you know, there's like just a lot of, I guess, things where I'm like, man, like what could have been for me? But, you know, like not everyone gets their fairy tale, unfortunately. And, you know, I've been dropped and recalled from the All Blacks about four times. So I'm kind of low-key a little bit used to it with Fozzie and co. So, look, I still feel like I dealt with it pretty well. But I guess knowing it was your last year as well, that it definitely hurts that everyone wants their fairy tale ending, right? But unfortunately, it wasn't to be for me. But still, I look back on my All Blacks career and my career in New Zealand, and I felt like I did so much more than I ever could have dreamed. Like, I never thought I'd be, you know, I was always a good rugby player when I was growing up, but I was never the best. I was never, like, especially at school and that, I was never a New Zealand school's out-and-out gun. I was just a bit of a battler. So I felt like I kind of got every little bit out of myself, you know, got every little bit of talent that I had inside me to get as far as I did, and, you know, to play over 100 Super Rugby games and play 18, I think it might have been 18 tests in the end, was like, I don't want to let that last year get in the way of how sort of proud I am of how much I did in New Zealand.
You didn't miss much. The boys had to do their own laundry and stuff. It was terrible. And mate, as the ABs are now moving on, they've got Scott Robertson coming in. Are you pumped to see him get his time at the head of the All Blacks? What are you expecting from them?
Yeah, I mean, I've only heard good things about Razor, obviously. I've been trying to beat his Crusader teams for the last 7 or 8 years and never quite got over the line. And I remember that I've only ever been coached by Razor once. It was he was the coach of my trial team at the New Zealand under-20s camp, like the trials that you have. And I just remember how motivating he was before the game. And I think we were like the lesser trial team playing against the better one. And we ended up getting up and beating that side. And I just remember thinking, man, I was really motivated going into that game because of his like pre-game speeches and stuff like that. So, and certainly a lot of the stuff I've heard around knowing his play, he's a pretty good player manager as such. Like, knows how to get the most out of players, which I think we're heading into a period of international rugby for the All Blacks, which is really unknown. A lot of guys moving on. Like, it's pretty obvious we probably can't say we're the best side in the world at the moment, or consistently have been over the last two or three years. So it's a real period where the head coach of the All Blacks is going to have to get absolutely everything out of his players to be the best in the world again. So no doubt he's probably the best guy for the job at the moment. In this time, he's coached young players, knows how to get the best out of them. And also what I think has probably flown a little bit under the radar is the coaching group that he's surrounded himself with. I think that's something that's probably been underrated with him over the last few years with the Crusaders. Like, he's always had really good assistants, and I was lucky enough to be coached by Leon McDonald and Scotty Hansen with the All Blacks 15, and really, really impressed with both of them. Certainly Scotty Hansen knows how to get a lot. Like, what we're talking about Paul Gustard as a defense coach, I'm pretty sure he'll be taking over the defense, and he's a really good defense coach. So Razor's been really smart around his assistants. He's pulled together a pretty good side. So they've got all the tools. I would never give up on New Zealand rugby in terms of the talent. I still think you see some of the players that are there and plays that are happening in Super Rugby at the moment, like on their day when they're at their best, they're still going to be hard to beat. And I'd like to think Razor's going to be pretty good for that new group.
What do you think he's going to start change style-wise? Like, we saw under Ian Foster, not stuttering, but different adaptations, different iterations of the side, how they want to play, chopping and changing a little bit with personnel. But with Razor, you've played against his Crusader sides for so long. Like, what do you get when you play against the Crusaders, and what should we expect from a new look All Black side?
This is I could get a little bit technical here because
go deep.
Okay, so I think, well, a lot of the way that the All Blacks have played the last four or five years is, particularly with our tens, the tens catch square, run square, and pass square. There hasn't been a lot of going more on a 45. Like you see, like the way Ireland play, the Johnny Sexton's going across the line at a 45 degree angle. He brings a forward down, has two going down, two forwards running down off him, a back out the back. I think we're going to see a little bit more. I think we'll see a lot more of that. And that'll unlock guys like Damian McKenzie. You know, that's why Richie Mwanga was, you know, he's been the best Super Rugby player for nigh on a decade. Like, he's just been phenomenal because of the way that he attacks. He really unlocks his tens. And I think if Damian McKenzie's out the All Black 10, they'll start attacking a bit more like that. It'll be less 10 square and passing to that forward pod square, because I guess in times past, we've always used guys like Brodie Retallick in that second man spot. We wanted him ball playing a lot. I think we're going to get less of that, and we're going to have more the 10 going back to being the ball player, taking it to the line, having guys, I guess, running off the 10 into holes, running a little bit more that shape. It's getting a little bit technical, but I think that's certainly how we attacked with the Chiefs the last few years. And when you've got Damian McKenzie's been the best player in Super Rugby, he's probably the best player in Super Rugby at the moment, and was last year. So if you unlock a guy like that in the international arena, I think they're going to tear some teams apart. So I think that's what we're going to see a lot more of.
And more broadly, just briefly on the international game, where New Zealand sit in it now, it's obviously a very tough question, and probably one that we could spend another hour talking about, but we won't. But the Six Nations is obviously a closed shop. Italy, thankfully, doing really well now. And Johnny and I were saying 10 games settled by a margin of less than 5 months. Points. It's as competitive as it's ever been. Georgia would love a place. Not going to happen, but you know, they're knocking on the door. In terms of the Rugby Championship, what would you do with it? Who should compete in it? How should it be structured? I know it's an easy one.
It's a great question. I think it's good as is, personally. It is. I haven't had probably a deep thought about it. I mean, teams like Japan you could bring in, but
they need time, right?
They would, yeah. I think teams like that probably, it'd be good to have a team like the Sunwolves and the Hawaiis back in Super Rugby. I don't think it's a coincidence that the best years that Japan had were while Sunwolves were in Super Rugby. Same with the Hawaiis. When they were in Super Rugby, Argentina were probably at their best. The big thing for New Zealand rugby at the moment is without the South Africans in Super Rugby now, we're going to need to find a way to get young guys experience playing against teams like South Africa. Because gone are the days where your trip to South Africa as part of a Super Rugby team was especially your first rounds, one of the most exciting things you can do. Like, you get your business class travel to South Africa, but you're experiencing this whole new thing. I remember playing at Newlands for the first time, and at Loftus first felt like these intimidating places to play against big South African men who just run it straight at you every single time for 80 minutes. It's an experience. And now a lot of guys are, the first time that they're playing against South Africa or in South Africa is for the All Blacks now. And the level up from Super Rugby to the test level in South Africa is just like a whole nother level. So need to find a way to maybe get some, I don't know if there's if you can get an under-20s tour to South Africa every year or something to expose these guys to that level of rugby, I think will help, because I just don't think Super Rugby is enough as it is just playing the Australian teams, because Australia play the way that we love playing against. They throw it around as well. They're pretty entertaining as well. But you don't get that exposure to that side that just wants to run straight over the top of you, or, you know, overpower you through set piece, through mauls, scrums and mauls, like you do against your England's, your France's, your Ireland's now. So the first time these guys are experiencing is at the international level. So yeah, like I said, we kind of need to find a way where we can expose some of our young guys to that different level of play.
If not, send them over to the top 14.
Yeah, all that. But I guess that's probably like the good thing around seeing the Crusaders go over and play against like Munster and that and Bristol, right? Like seeing stuff like that is a really good experience for young guys like that. And I remember, like, even I've played for that All Blacks 15 the last couple of years. When we played against the Barbarians at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, we had a lot of young guys. You know, I was probably the oldest by, me and Bryce Seam were probably the oldest by about 5 years, just a couple of token old boys with a real young side. But playing against that Barbarians team, which had a lot of top 14 men, you know, men that have been playing men rugby for a long time, and just seeing some of the looks on those young boys' faces 20 minutes into that game going, holy shit, like this is different kettle of fish here that we're playing up against. Like, need more experiences like that for those guys, because I think that's more important than maybe overhauling rugby championship at the moment.
Mate, super interesting. Domestically, you mentioned earlier you're heading to Lyon this weekend. You've done all of your previews. We're Tuesday afternoon. Your two big training days are done. What's waiting for you in Lyon? What do you expect there?
We've got some pretty exciting, like that the nine at the moment. What's his name? Coolio. He's a top try scorer and top 14 at the moment, I think. And guys like him and that Georgian winger that they snipe around the ruck a lot. So they're pretty dangerous. And if you give them time and space, we're going to have to hopefully not give that nine too much chance to run and show me up. It'd be quite good. Hopefully we can shut him down. I'm not sure what sort of team they'll be naming, but geez, I hope hopefully those the Telfer Fanua boys, hopefully they get an arrest this weekend. That'd be nice too. But yeah, we're gonna have to, like, they had a tough sort of patch in the middle of or at the start of the season, but they're starting to get some of their big dogs back now. So their expansive style of play will really test our defense this week, because we're good at bashing teams, but we can be picked off a little bit with some exciting backs. So hopefully they don't get too much time and space to pick us off. That's the plan anyway.
Yeah, speaking of pests, there's a couple of big ones. Niniashvili is all over the place, isn't he, Johnny? Intercepts over the ball. He's one to watch out for sure.
He's a freak show.
Cheers, Brad. Thanks ever so much for coming on. Good luck in Lyon, and sign up Rory Cockett's agent. We'll speak to you in 5 years' time.
Yeah, I want whatever he's on, for sure. Cheers, lads. No, appreciate you having me on. It's been great chatting.
Pleasure, mate. Thanks for joining us. Best luck this weekend, and we'll get you on at the end of the year when you win the top 14.
Absolutely. Yeah. Hopefully a few beers deep.
Definitely. Cheers, Brad. Cheers. Good to hear Brad settling into life in France, Johnny. And cultural differences, eh? You have to wash your own kit in New Zealand. No free lunches.
The hardship. I didn't know it was so hard back in New Zealand. No. Seriously, he is a proper player. We're lucky to have him in the top 14. Really nice for him to give us some of his time. And he's a good egg. Like, speaks really well. He'll have a big impact for Stade Francais over the next couple of seasons. So, yeah, great to have him on. And if things go well, playoffs, semis, finals, they're flying high at the minute in pole position. So, might be their year. Great to have him on at the end of the year if they do well.
Yeah, we might speak to him in a few months' time. It was interesting, though, because they've signed him as a player that we all know what Brad Weber can do. He's obviously had to adapt his game to the top 14. Maybe they're still finding that balance of how much he should kick and how much he should be Brad Weber.
Slow down, Brad. Like, you imagine Karim Ghazal on the field. Slow down, mate. You're forgetting where you are. You're in France. Look, but they've signed them, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they've obviously done their due diligence. They know what they're getting, but they also play on a carpet. They play on a synthetic pitch in Paris where they're there to entertain. And that's what he does. Front football, speed, his speed to the breakdown, his speed of service. He's just rapid. So, mate, he's a joy to watch. I love watching him. I've always been a massive fan. So as much as, yes, they're going through building on set piece, kicking game, power, big defense. He mentioned, as the sun pokes his head out, which is starting to do, mate, already in the south, we'll hopefully see more of him ripping up some top 14 pitches near us, because he is class on ball.
And he will be in action for Stade Francais against Lyon this weekend. We chatted about that one. You mentioned earlier on Dupont and Entermac both back in training for Toulouse.
Yeah.
Presumably Roman won't start. Who knows about Antoine? He's going to be available for most of their games now, it seems, between now and the end of the season. They travel to Bordeaux in the primetime game on Sunday night. A couple of big ones there. What are you looking forward to most in the top 14 this weekend?
I don't know, mate. I'm just like, after speaking about the playoffs, I'm just looking at the top 14 table again. I actually didn't realize. So Stade Francais and Toulouse are on 55. They're 10 points ahead of third and fourth. So they've actually opened up a fairly decent gap. The pack then behind them is really tight. So all of these games, like from 3 down to 14, now I've got something to play for every single game. We're in the back stretch of the season. I'm looking forward to Toulon-Montpellier because that's always a big game. Two sort of neighbours, we consider that a derby back in the day. Montpellier-Toulon was always a biggie. Oyonnax-Perpignan, you got 14th playing against 13th.
It's a big one, that.
It's huge. Like, effectively, Oyonnax playing at home.
Must win for Oyonnax, right?
Yeah, it's for their survival, right? So Oyonnax need to win at home to Perpignan. Perpignan know effectively they win that game, they can bury Oyonnax. And also it gets them out of the playoff spot in 30th. So that's huge for both sides. Cast at home to Racing. That's 5th against 6th. So again, you're talking barrage spots up for grabs. They're both on 44 points. Can you create a bit of daylight? That's huge. Clermont against Pau. I mean, Clermont are now down in 10th on 38 points, but you're only, what, 6 points away from the playoffs. Clermont haven't been going well, so they need a big win. Four up on 44. And then, as ever, Bayonne against La Rochelle. La Rochelle is starting to find their feet. It'll be interesting to see who they get back for this game. Will they get Colomb? Will he come back into the squad? Will Greg Aldred? He's had a bit of rest, I guess, with his leg injury. Will Greg come back in? But Bayonne still haven't been beaten at home this season. They've been ridiculous at home. So every single game, there's something to play for. We'll hopefully get a chunk of the French squad back. I think there's 11 boys that are ring-fenced and won't play any games in the top 14 after their workload over the past 5-6 weekends. But yeah, top-class games. Looking forward to it. And as I said, the sun is back out. Summer rugby's on its way. So looking forward to watching them this weekend.
Yeah, another good weekend ahead in the top 14. One more next week, and then we're back into European action.
And we should mention, mate, like finishing on Bayonne, done deal. Manu Tuilagi, 2-year deal.
Dundale?
He's yet
been
to do
reported as such, but
he hasn't done his medical. So they've offloaded Peo Muscardits this week, who youngster that's come through the club. They've actually offloaded him to Agen to get some game time. But he's 28. He was the former captain of the club. They've got rid of him. And Manu's in. So it's been announced that he's signed a 2-year deal. They've beaten off Montpellier and Perpignan. He did visits there, went to see around the training grounds, but he's decided Bayonne's the destination. So if he passes his medical at the end of this week, I think it is, then he's going to be in Bayonne next season, which is pretty huge news for Bayonne.
Huge for Bayonne. And interesting as well, because if Manu settles well into French life, if they manage him well, if they can, he's not going to play all 26 games and whatever else, but if they can get the best out of him, he is going to be a hell of an asset. But that is a big if.
It's just the physical. When you stick Manu on the field, you know what you're getting, but it's just how can they manage him? He's had a really tricky, 3-4 seasons now with injury. So effectively by leaving, he's announcing his international retirement, but it's how can Bayonne manage him? He's 32. He might be 33 by the time he gets here. How can they manage him through, and what can they get out of him for 2 years? Because on form, he's one of the best rugby players on the planet. But if he spends too much time in with the physios, it's not of interest to him or to the club. So the hope is they can get him right, they can get him fit, and they can get him to a level that he can match the grind of the top 14 and help them climb even further up the top 14 table.
And let's be honest, a lot of people will talk about it. We just posed the obvious question there, but it can go one of two ways. We don't know. Some people move to France at that stage in their career and it suits them so well and he could thrive.
Who would be the best comparison? Johnny Wilkinson.
Mm.
Came pretty much post-30s, big injuries, struggled at Newcastle, came here and found the form of his life. So he was hoping it's the same for Manu. I'm sure he'll settle well into French life. He's already got a lot of family over here in Perpignan, which would be pretty cool for him to have in the south of France. There's worse spots to be, isn't there? So big news for Manu and great for Bayonne.
Absolutely. Thanks, Johnny. A big thanks to Brad Weber for joining us. And thanks to all you guys for listening. Make sure you hit subscribe, leave us a nice review if you can, and check us out on Rugby Pass as well as on YouTube. We'll be back with another episode next week. Au revoir, Johnny.
See you, mate.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics, all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.